Hello, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is Jonathan Chesney, a priest serving at Church of the Holy Communion Episcopal, one of the parishes in the Diocese of West Tennessee. And I'm here today with Josh Horton, designer and community-minded creative, and we'll be speaking a little bit later about that. Every Thursday at 8 a.m., you have the opportunity to hear us speak with interesting people and to learn about the intersection of faith in their lives. We are broadcast from WYXR 91.7 FM in Memphis, Tennessee, and a very good morning to you today. Our segment, Saints of the Day, Feasts and Fast, will touch base with one of the saints or holy folks or just inspiring people that we experience both from the ancient past and in our modern day. And today I thought our saint of the day would be St. Matthew, apostle and evangelist, whose feast day in the church calendar was yesterday. Tradition holds that the apostle was also the writer of the gospel so entitled, though most scholars seem to think it unlikely today. The apostle was also known as Levi, and when called to follow by Jesus, left immediately and became one of the 12. Matthew was a tax collector, one of the groups of disreputable people that Jesus got criticized for spending time around, though in their case, perhaps not undeservedly so. Tax collectors were triply disliked, not just what we feel today about the IRS, but also because their only pay came from padding the tax, scooping extra off the top from the people they lived amongst, and worst of all, because they were working on behalf of the Roman Empire occupying Israel. They were seen as collaborators and traitors by pious Jews and nationalist zealots alike. Jesus, of course, was not one to worry too much what others thought of him, and in the gospel, some of his parables even concerned tax collectors, as when the humble publican's prayer for mercy was more acceptable than the proud Pharisees. Not much more is known about Matthew's life, with some traditions having him traveling east and becoming a martyr, though clear details remain unknown. The gospel bearing his name has remained, of course, one favored by the church and preachers, with plenty of stories, parables, and teachings of Jesus to utilize not only faith, but how one should treat one's neighbors, family, and even enemies. In addition to Jesus' example of giving people the benefit of the doubt, of inviting them to dare become their better selves, it is the reconciliation of enemies that Matthew highlights for me. One of Matthew's fellow apostles was Simon the Zealot, indicating membership among the groups of freedom fighters who were violently resisting Roman rule, and a tax collector would have been among the most hated and accessible representatives of that rule. The fact that Jesus calls them together to follow him offers a difficult ideal for those of us who claim to be disciples, the willingness to try to engage with one another across even the many differences we hold in a diverse worldwide church. I don't think that means being pushovers or allowing others to walk all over us or even letting go of our convictions, but it does mean making space to find those important things we can come around and those things that are most important, those things that we can collaborate to do. It means we can't write anybody off, even if and when we may have to protect ourselves and others with healthy boundaries, even if we are angry about decisions or actions that are harmful or hurtful, we can't write people off. And I think that's something a lot of Christians need to remember today, whatever identities that they hold. And so that is a little bit of the story of St. Matthew, and we will now be moving on. Good morning again. We are back here at Faithfully Memphis, and I am so pleased today to welcome Josh Horton, a native of Memphis, a member of the creative and design community, which especially tees us up for the theme that we have been following a little bit on the radio show here of creativity and spirituality, of art, and all of the wonderful things that people do to help show and make meaning in the world. So, Josh, we are so glad to help and to have and welcome you today. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Would love to just hear, both for myself, as I'm kind of just getting to know you, and for the folks listening, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of where you got to where you are now and what where exactly that is, what you're up to, what is kind of driving you and moving you forward these days?
Sure. So, I'm like you said, I'm from Memphis. I grew up here. A little outside of Memphis. I always tell people, if you were here during the Adventure River days, I grew up in the neighborhood right next to Adventure River. And then when I was 13, my parents moved out to Bartlett, and I lived out there until I was 18. And one of the things that I just remember so vividly is like a desire to like get out, right? Like I was 18, yeah. 1997. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to get out of this place. And so I went to Belmont University for a year. I wanted to study music business and recording. Did that for a year. Couldn't get my hands on the gear. And so I ended up coming back home for a semester. Then I went to a college in Florida and got a degree in recording engineering. Came back to Memphis, worked at Ardent Studios and Records, was a recording engineer for a couple years there, and didn't really like where that was going. The studio at that time was just packed full of really amazing producers and artists and things like that. So there wasn't like a space for me to kind of grow into that. And so I just set out on my own to, inside the company, there was a gap. And so I basically created a position for myself and said, hey, you know, I'll help you with advertising, marketing, anything. Like I knew how to use the programs on a computer.
Sure.
And so I just kind of like, I faked it, I guess, until I made it that scenario.
Sure.
I was there for 2 years doing that and I realized I wasn't that great at it. So I asked a person who's now a great friend, hey, could I intern at your studio in Seattle for a summer? Went up to Seattle for a summer, ended up making some of the best friends that I've ever had in my life. I got a job there for 3 years. And in that time, I just basically saw, you know, like what it's like to have a mentor relationship in your life and someone kind of like pouring into you, helping to shape you. That grew me exponentially. I also saw, in Seattle, just kind of what creativity can do for culture and like a community, like how, you know, everyone knew Seattle at that time for just being really cool with music and art and all of those things and film. And so, I was there for 3 years and then I just felt convicted to come back home. I was like, I knew that my story wasn't finished in Memphis. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come back and help the community. I actually wanted to work at Ardent Records and Studios again. But that position didn't open up. And so I started plugging in, doing freelance design work. And when I was in Seattle, sorry for those who are kind of trying to make sense of this, I did, album art and packaging, and posters and apparel for the music industry for 3 years. The coolest job I've ever had for sure.
Yeah.
That job doesn't really exist like other jobs do now.
No. And for our younger listeners, there was a physical item that gave music called a CD or even a cassette tape, perhaps for Josh and my generation. And you would spend hours as a music person looking at the liner notes and admiring the art that came with it. It was sort of a secondary platform for whatever the artist, I think, was trying to convey and kind of went along with the music in really interesting ways. So
yeah, absolutely. I spent so much time. We do. And I spent so much time as a young person in my room poring over these materials that I feel like it just kind of immediately qualified me for this position and doing this work. Cause I felt like, man, I know what's important about this. So, you know, I came back from Seattle and I was here for a good little bit. And I realized that most of my friends that I was a young designer with were fairly just kind of disconnected. They never had opportunities to leave. And so, they were fairly uninspired and apathetic kind of towards community and potential and all of these things. And it was a negative place to come back to, frankly.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And years went by. And in 2014, I decided to bring my network to Memphis to kind of inspire and energize us to do really amazing work here. And so that's kind of the genesis of the Creative Works Conference and what I do now.
That's really interesting. And so, I was looking at Creative Works Conference a little bit, and it sounds like an opportunity, like you said, of bringing if people are unable to leave Memphis and sort of get out of some of their bubbles and just circles, which happens to all of us at one time or another, that sort of bringing folks from all over to come to Memphis and hopefully kind of connect. What do you think? What is it about? I think that's something really critical, and it sounds, I don't know if that insight came from anywhere particular or just was mostly, again, from your own exposure and travels, but the way that other people and their own unique perspectives both kind of pushes our own almost the boundaries of what we can even imagine as possible, and maybe I know in my own experience lights some fires.
That's right.
For someone who's not necessarily a naturally ambitious person, but once you see some of the things that other people can do, it sort of makes you a little bit hungry for it. I think maybe
it does. I mean, I talk about what we do at the conferences. We celebrate the possibilities and the work of a creative career. And like you said, what it does is it just opens up your eyes to what's possible and helps you as a creative person, as a creative professional, it helps you understand, you know, where your value could be in making change, right? That's what creatives do by nature, is just make change. And so it's vitally important, especially in a city like Memphis, that we do this. And I think there's a way. So in Memphis, too, there's this idea that outside influence is not a good thing. Like, we don't want to change things here. But here's the thing, is you can have outside influence, but you can also make whatever you create here authentically Memphis, right? So we're not talking about taking things that other cities are doing and other communities are doing and kind of, you know, whitewashing what we're doing here in Memphis. We're really talking about like helping people understand that, oh, wow, so this is possible. It is possible to do X, Y, and Z. But there's a way to do it here in Memphis that's authentically Memphis. And so that's what I really set out to do. That's what I set out to do. You know, it's been 8 years of the conference this year, 9 years of me doing this work.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. And so that's just my desire. I grew exponentially because I had people mentoring me and telling me, hey, you should do this and not that. And then I was just constantly inspired because not only was I around a really amazing community, but I was around, you know, a bunch of kids and bands, and their minds at that time were limitless. And so it's like what we all could do together was just incredible. And so, yeah, I loved that time there. And I also just love, you know, bringing that back to Memphis over and over. And those that have plugged into, you know, our values and you know, the way that we perceive, you know, success in a creative career have really thrived. And I'm very, very proud of the work that I've been able to do here.
That sounds really, really important. And there's something too. I mean, of course, there's sort of those hard skills that people can learn from each other in workshops and things like that. And networking is always great and, you know, can open up avenues that might not open otherwise. But I almost wonder, you know, you spoke about the desire for community that you were looking for when you got back home and maybe wasn't kind of there at that time, or at least not that you kind of plugged into. And there's something almost, I would say almost, I'm having trouble even finding the words. Pure isn't the right one, but even without the kind of tactile skills or the things that you can name, there's something about being with other people who are interested and passionate in doing the things that you're doing that I think contributes maybe to just health, like if you want to call it spiritual health, if you want to call it emotional and mental health, just that there's something about human beings that we do better, at least I sort of generally think so, when we're around others and share some things. And we already said are pushed in some ways, but there's almost something that if we're isolated from that or don't have some piece of that in ourselves, even hard introverts like myself, we're lacking something a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny when I start talking about creative works to some people, it sounds so quickly like church. Right. So, but you get the same benefits from church as you do from community, right? Mm-hmm. Church is a community of believers, right? Shared believers, shared beliefs. And I think, you know, I think deep down inside, honestly, most of us feel alone. Uh-huh. And I think when you get together with a group of like-minded people with similar values and that believe in the same potential of whatever it is, right? So we could say creative work, or we could say, I don't know how y'all would say this, but like, you know, the redeeming, you know, aspects of the blood of Christ. I don't know, you know, like those same shared beliefs just create something that makes people feel empowered in ways that they wouldn't normally feel by themselves, right? Yeah. And I think that's the thing we try to harness every year is the, you know, and there's so many things that happen in community, right? Like accountability, like that's a huge thing. Inspiration is a huge thing. And so I just think that community in particular for people is good. It's like, it's great to find your people, right? And I stressed to everyone listening, you should find your people. And for us, we're all about helping people understand their potential as creative professionals and the potential of creative work. how to harness that and to make a living, and then also live, you know, a career of purpose too. I think that's really important for a lot of people who are creating.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. Well, and especially in, not that I'm know very much about that sort of sphere of professionalism, but I imagine that you really have to feel strongly and have some real belief about what you're up to, what your purpose is, to sort of break into what perhaps is a challenging, have to kind of scrap. And it sounded like you really worked hard to kind of hustle and find space for yourself within where your gifts and talents and skills could kind of be utilized.
I didn't really know growing up that I could have a career like this, right? You know, like I would see, picture pages or, you know, like something, you know, the Bob Ross or whatever, you know, and I would see examples of people being creative, but it was mostly entertainment. Mm-hmm. I never really saw someone, I didn't really understand, like, where did all these illustrations in this book come from? Where did, you know, the illustrations in this manual that I'm, you know, using to put stickers on my Knight Rider vehicle, where did that come from, right? Like, I just never really understood that that was a career path.
Yeah.
And one of the things I just love now is just being able to articulate these things, regardless of what my kids end up doing, you know, just being able to articulate that, hey, there was intent and purpose behind all of the stuff that you experience, you know, from your watch to your phone to your, you know, the bed that you sleep in, all of those things were designed.
Right.
And
right.
So just trying to get to the core of like why that's important, because I think it's important too, like design solves a human problem. And I just, people don't value design as much, especially here in the Deep South, but like design is something that should be valued and advocated for because it helps a lot of people. And so I just, I'm trying to communicate that because that's just nothing I got a sense of when I was growing up.
Sure. Well, and it's so, sort of just behind the scenes or outside, unless you have kind of a direct connection to someone who is working around that
that's
intent.
Right.
It might not always pick up. And it's important too, because besides people trying to solve human problems and use that power for positive things, of course there are so many voices and so many people with different agendas, and there are some of the ways that people might try to influence us in ways that we might not choose to be influenced.
That's
if we kind of knew about it, but it can slide under the radar.
That's right.
About. So to be aware of that, I think is especially more important these days. Especially, I have trouble even imagining growing up at this point with how much input there is, how many different voices, how much noise,
Oh, yeah.
How many different ads and social medias, and just all of the different ways that you're now receiving intent and design and for better and for worse. It just seems like another thing we could do is really help our kiddos sort of figure out how to, block out when you need some peace, or how to sort of focus and kind of understand and sort of suss out what people's intent and design are, even when it's kind of very subtle like that. I don't know.
No, that's good. And real quickly, if anyone's interested, you should watch a thing on Netflix called The Social Dilemma.
Yeah.
It talks about the intention.
Scary.
Yeah, it is. I had to shut it off. So it just talks about the intention behind the people who are building social media platforms, why they do what they do and how they make money doing it and what they do to make sure that that money comes in. And it's really, at the end of the day, it's horrible. People have to live with it.
Yeah.
I'm on social media.
Right.
My company's on social media.
Right.
I got to do it. So.
Yeah. It's sort of the water we swim in now.
That's right.
And as you know, it kind of leaves you with a disturbing feeling. At least it did for me when I sort of watched part of it, but knowing also then helps. It helps me, you know, and I'm still not perfect at this, as my wife would attest, but knowing a little bit about that helps you make different choices with
That's
how
right.
you
navigating the dynamic
or time to put the phone down or whatever.
That's right.
And that kind of has helped a little
bit.
Well, it came up the intersection of community and belief and faith belief or spiritual belief to me has a lot of overlaps, and that has come up already a little bit. But do you have a religious or a spiritual background? And I'd be curious to see how you sort of, whether you see that as sort of having contributed or even driven or just how that has maybe called you into what I would call very much a vocation
yeah,
of creativity and connection.
I use the word calling a lot when I talk to people about what I do. And for better or for worse, I mean, it's like a, it's a thing you feel compelled to do. But I grew up, right outside of Memphis and Southern Baptist churches, a handful of them that, you know, split off. And when the people didn't like what was going on, just split off and went to another church, whatever. And I grew up in a very strict and conservative kind of dynamic, mm-hmm. home and, you know, the world around me. And, it's one of the things I think I ran from when I graduated from high school. Frankly, I went to a church, in downtown Franklin, when I was at Belmont. Scotty Smith was the pastor, and I can't remember. It's like Christ Church or something, Christ City Church or something like that. I can't remember exactly the name, but anyway, it was the first time I was basically exposed to grace, right?
Oh, wow.
So, it was kind of like a grace, not grace-based, but like just, it was a, this idea that like, it's okay, right? Like, of course, like I just kind of grew up just feeling like I was never enough,
right?
You do that to someone long enough, man, that messes you up.
Yeah.
And so I went to college my first time as an adult, kind of worshiping without my family and my church or my high school friends, and basically just kind of like leaned into a new theology that helped me kind of reconcile with growing up and what I had, you know, experienced and like how I could make sense of it kind of growing into my 20s and 30s.
Sure.
But what I would say now is that I've always felt deeply convicted. I grew up next to Adventure River, and there were a couple of guys who grew up in my neighborhood that had long hair. And if some of you guys know me, you may know who these folks are, but they had long hair. They listened to like metal and like had like played guitar and played drums. And basically they were ostracized by most of the neighborhood because they were different. Their parents didn't raise them the same way that everyone else's parents did. And I just saw like, and their father passed away, and like, they just had a really tough go at it. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of tell today, I mean, they're really amazing people still today, but you can kind of tell that like that had its impact, and people didn't love on them when they should have.
Right.
And my family just kind of like basically told me to stay away mm-hmm. from them. Mm-hmm. And I just, through experiencing that and thinking about that and thinking about how many times that sort of thing happened with really cool, creative people, I just realized like growing up that, man, I want to spend the rest of my life empowering people like that, helping them realize their potential.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. And that's where the seed was planted. I know this now. I didn't know that at the time, but the seed was planted there mm-hmm. because I had so much fun with those guys.
Yeah.
We were like a band without, you know, the ability to be a band at that time. So, anyway, I still think fondly about them, and it really just, I felt deeply convicted. I was in that career that I was talking about, like, you know, 3 years at Asterix Studio and Invisible Creature, and there's like a book out now that has my work in it, and it's incredible. Like, and I did that before I was 27.
Wow.
And so I knew from a very early age that I wanted to support and grow more people like that. And I have a lot of really amazing talent, but at the same time, like, there are people that have much more talent than I do. And so instead of me always trying to compete with them, what I'd like to do is just support them in a way that helps them reach their potential. Mm-hmm. And so that calling, if you will, and again, I don't know where the calling comes from, but it feels real, and it's something that I can't escape. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, I took that to heart, and it's really guided the work that I do here in Memphis. I mean, regardless of how many people it brings in from outside the city, and it's about 85% this year, honestly, like I do it for this city. And I do it to help change the dynamic and help my kids, you know, who knows what they're going to be when they grow up, but I just want them to grow up in a city that like values fresh ideas, new takes, new work, and change. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like my work is vitally important to that.
Sure. Sure. It makes me think the last 2 years of high school, I had a chance to get into an art and kind of math science. It was still public school, but you had to apply to get in. And 11th grade was the last year to get in. And I had generally been one of those kids that was kind of effortlessly breezing along through school and usually doing very well in school and not having to worry about it, and then suddenly placed among this atmosphere of all of those kids who are now together and kids doing creative writing and dance and visual arts and math and science, who were now suddenly, I was at the bottom of the class, and it sort of helped me lose that competitive desire to somehow think that I was at top, and kind of really drove home that lesson that there's always someone with a little bit more gift or a little bit more talent than you, and someone who you perhaps have a little bit more of that. And so that was kind of a humbling, but also I think an enlivening experience that, it made me think, well, what is my place? And that doesn't mean I can't do the things that I enjoy and want to do, but that maybe I also have, how do those things relate and connect to other people who are doing either other or similar things. That vocation, a brilliant writer, Fred Buechner, just died recently, and his quote on vocation is one that has remained with me. And it said, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but it was something like, vocation is where your great joy and the world's deep need intersect. Oh, wow. And that kind of sounds perfectly encapsulated.
Yeah, that's the groove you want to hit. You know, I mean, I think, especially if you live here in Memphis, I think there's a lot of need here. There's a lot of desire for change. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel deeply for change makers here in our city and people who want to do that. And so my hope is that, you know, our conference and events and things like that will just help shake something loose, help show people the potential of change and what it could do for a community. And I think creative people are on the forefront of all of those things. I mean, communicators and storytellers. I mean, so basically design and storytelling is like key to survival, right? Like, I feel like that's why we do it in the first place, right? If you think about our earliest times on this planet as humans, you know, basically the gist is they're solving problems so they can survive, right? They're making tools and, you know, starting fires and then trying to figure out how to, I mean, at some point it gets commercialized, right? But like before that, it's not. And it's really for survival. And so I just think it's a human thing that we have to create. And as time is going on, there seems to be a sense of like, okay, so these people are better at innovating and these people maybe aren't. And that's all okay. We can all live together. But I want to encourage and hope others can encourage. So if you're not a creative person, become a creative advocate and just encourage the people that are kind of on the front lines, you know, making the change that our communities need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's driven. I mentioned in email yesterday, besides being the feast day of St. Matthew, was also the anniversary of J.R.R. Tolkien's publishing of The Hobbit. And something that Tolkien wrote in another one of his pieces on fairy stories was basically making an argument that at the time, of course, in sort of stuffy Oxford, England, he was criticized sometimes for being so interested in fairy tales and that what use were these sort of children's things. And Tolkien, very persuasively for me at least, made the case that human beings create and make because we're made in the image of a creator and a maker. How could we not? How could that not be a core piece of being a human person? And I think, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say, oh, I'm not creative. In church, you'll hear people say, oh, I can't sing. And that's almost always because someone at some point said, ooh,
that's right,
you shouldn't sing. Or, ooh, no.
Unfortunately, that was probably most of their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. It's tough that we have a lot of wounds and baggage out there that people hopefully will eventually at some point hear that message of grace, that things are okay. But, I think even if that creativity doesn't come out in one of the, sort of usual or perhaps, ways that people typically think of when they think about creativity, I think it's all in there. Whatever we're doing, there's some connection to it. And whether that is enjoying it and letting someone else's creativity move you, that's a partnership.
That's
the creative act seems to be such a relationship that you can't take part of it, you can't engage it without it also, I think, somehow stirring your own creativity, even if that is just making you to think or see or perceive the world a slightly bit differently, even if you don't necessarily agree or want or enjoy it is sort of making you deal and adapt. And I think sometimes even as challenging as that can be, is a positive thing, as you say, for sort of the mean of all of our visions of what it means to be a healthy community, to be a whole community. And I think most of us would say we want that, whether we may agree or disagree on the best methods,
the approach,
pursue that. And I think it's so necessary.
Absolutely.
Touching on that, I wonder, sort of, sometimes these words, of course, have different meanings for different people and different understandings, and sometimes there's conversation in the religious world about spirituality and religion and where those overlap, what do they actually mean? And for me, I kind of hear spirituality as the, you know, it certainly, of course, has to do with religion, but it also has to do with who we are and how we make meaning of the world around us, which, you know, who knows, again, in sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it may not sort of jump out as something as necessary as shelter or food. But if you, as you just study human history, we can't not do it. As soon as we have figured out, and even as we are figuring out how to survive, I mean, the cave paintings go back so many thousands of years that people were working to convey and share and explore and make meaning from the earliest days, it seems like. So I wonder sort of if you have thoughts about sort of the spiritual aspect of creation, of creating things, of creativity, of your own work of design, and just, I don't know how that kind of jives for you, especially since it's the main topic of the season's podcasts. I don't know what if you have where that kind of comes for you.
Yeah, I think for me, spirituality and just kind of, it's a practice. It's a way for me, at least, of like understanding my place in history, if you will, because I feel like when I take a huge step back, you know, and really, like, I can't take a step that big. So I have to even kind of through faith, kind of take a much larger journey, but I just start to look at the world and the universe. And, you know, when I'm in the world, I look at things like waterfalls and oceans and, forests and things that are just like so big that I can't even imagine them, right? I can't accurately imagine them. And I just keep on going back and back and back and back until I start to think about things like the universe and even seeing, you know, the Webb, I think it's the Webb telescope or whatever the new one is. There's a Hubble. Yeah. So like, you know, I think for me, I feel like spirituality for me at this moment has so much to do with me just not knowing and being okay with not knowing and being in awe of not knowing and being in awe of like God's creation or the creator or however you kind of define that in your own spiritual life, you know? And so I feel like for me, it's always important to keep that stuff in the forefront, because if I'm always just concerned about me, then I live a very individualistic and selfish life. And that has an incredible amount of collateral damage, not only in your own family, but in your own friend group and your community. And so I kind of, you know, you've alluded to it, or I feel like we've kind of spoken around it too, but I just feel like I try to live in that because, I think it provides a healthy bit of humility, for, you know, us, and just like, you know, either acknowledging, you know, your place in the world or your privilege or whatever it is. It's like just being in a space where you just acknowledge that there's more than just you. Mm. And I think for some of us, you know, living in hard times and hard things happening for us, you know, it's important to keep that in the forefront, that there's something else going on. There's something bigger than just you. So just take a deep breath, relax, and push through it, just knowing that there's something on the other side. I mean, again, I feel like I'm speaking around specifics, but in my own life, that's really the gist of it, is like, I try not to these days put too many specifics to things that I can't understand and I don't know the answer to. Sure. Right. Because that's speculation.
Yeah.
And so I just try to live in that space.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. And, I think another one of the things, is remembering back to being young and engaging, art that was open to, you know, a wide array of interpretations.
And, that's right.
I don't know what it is about people. This might just be a personality thing. Maybe it has to do with some of our own kind of childhood stuff that happens about what your capacity for uncertainty is, whether you can kind of deal, whether it's some folk that makes you really uncomfortable. I don't know, that maybe this sense of instability or
that's right.
If nothing is certain or a few things are certain, sort of how do you go about? And, I don't know. I think, I'm of course have a biased perspective. I think very few things are certain. So we better all sort of try to get a little comfortable with that, or at least be able to navigate that. Cause as you sort of said, I know very few people that would say what I imagined at age 13 was right. Where I ended up, or, you know, and even, just life takes you to so many different places and so many challenging places, whatever your circumstances and whatever kind of sort of bubbles and circles that you're living in. And so I think it's kind of a unifier, but I think you're right on with sort of that that things that help you find humility and live in that kind of place are so positive, because otherwise you're either ignoring the wounds of others, and because you can't imagine that something that they've gone through is as difficult or as hurtful or as harmful as they may say it is. Or if, you know, I think when we're wounded too, we have the choice to sort of act out of it. We can kind of allow it to continue to wound us, to continue to be sort of an open wound. And that often, as you said, then wounds others, hurt people. Right.
That's right.
Or you can sort of choose to, try to make something of it and to enlarge your own empathy, to enlarge your own, that possibility of, a bishop once told me his sort of, and this I think was a kind of a wonderful thing, his, operative at seminary, you know, students who are usually reasonably smart people and, but also have strong opinions about things, about the world, about ethics, about theology, about what all the different aspects of in my tradition, Anglican Christianity, you know, what's important, what's not, what is part of the core components of the faith, all of that, and lots of different opinions. But this bishop would always say the most important reminder he had was, I could be wrong. I was told one time by a mentor, well, you could be wrong. And to kind of keep that allows us hopefully to do less.
Yeah, right.
That's of those around us.
I know. That's incredible. I've read a book and spent a lot of time just kind of thinking about a book that Pete Enns wrote called The Sin of Certainty. And the gist is that, you know, the more you think that you know, the more you're probably off, and that you can't use those things, weaponize those things. You know, you can weaponize them, but a lot of people do, but there's just so much that we don't know if we acknowledge a creator. And so anyway, it's one of the things that's kind of helped me live kind of in that, you know, that theology is just, I don't know, and that's okay. But there's got to be something bigger than me. And so how do I respond to that?
You mentioned an experience of what you felt was, what I heard you say was sort of experiencing grace
yeah.
for the first time when
yeah.
you kind of went off to college. And man, what an open and wide open space of life, at least from what I experienced at that time of life. So I'm glad that is kind of when it hit you. And it's just such a shame, especially, you know, not to throw stones, but out of the sort of Protestant religion, which is sort of course, so operative in our kind of Southern context. Grace was supposed to be a core component. Yes, that all fall short of the glory of God, and that was supposed to be sort of a humble thing, a thing that helped us find humility, but then that God's grace was so operative as to be there for all of us, because we're all on that level of humbleness, that same level of falling shortness. So I don't know where we lost that piece that Luther, you know, died for.
Right.
You know, it, one without the other, you know, the sin stuff, the we're all fallen stuff without the grace is just, it doesn't work. And it's not the Christian message either. So
it's not.
But anyway, and here I think where I'm interested in kind of going with this is, without grace, you mentioned, I noticed a spot on your website that talked about failure, and you've referenced that as well. And of course, that's kind of, from my understanding in the creative world and the design world, folks in, the kind of, computing and programming world, I think a lot hold, Samuel Beckett's quotation, try again, fail better as kind of key, as sort of the engine of creativity, the engine
That's right.
of, experimentation and learning. And without grace, what a terrifying thing. Well, of course, how much of our culture, how much of our society, I think, is held back by the fear of failure, because failure means you're bad, you're wrong, you're not worthy, you don't have the gifts, you don't have the talents. And what would, I don't know, thoughts
you're,
on that? What
no,
would,
you're saying really good stuff. No, I mean, that's the gist of it. I mean, that message came out from a very personal place for two reasons, is that I have kids. Two 15-year-olds, 11-year-old. Yeah, so I have four kids, two 15-year-olds, 11-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
Oh, wow.
And the older ones are just, you know, on their phones a lot. And you know, the message that they're being fed about things like appearance and success, you know, they're being shown basically like just successes, you know, unless it's a, like a fail reel, which is about like horrible failures. And that's very embarrassing or cringy, as they would like to say. And so what that does over time to young people in particular that just can't put those things in perspective yet, it doesn't give them a sense that failure is an option.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you do fail, it's something you need to be shameful about. Uh-huh. Right. And so, you know, that's kind of one of the areas that I'm kind of getting this sense of it for, too. And then we just went through a pandemic. My job is bringing people together in person. Right. Mm. And right before the pandemic set in, my wife and I purchased a house. And the only way that our family could live in this house is if I renovated this house. So during the pandemic, you know, I'm renovating a house, which is like the worst thing to do. I also had a kid. And then my wife had a remote job, so she could stay at home. Well, I have a job, but it's like I was the only parent that could really take care of our son during this time. And so if you were to kind of just look at things like from an A-B perspective, it looked like I failed. And it also felt like I was a failure, right? Mm-hmm. And in the words of my kids, unfortunately, sometimes I was reminded that I wasn't, you know, hitting that mark mm-hmm. that I used to. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like coming into this year and this conference, every year we have a theme, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just an ethos that I want the speakers and the people that are in the room to just kind of keep in mind, to kind of talk about their own experiences and their own, you know, struggles with failure. But what I say on the website and what I, you know, start to talk to people about, and I try to encourage my kids with, is like failure is a part of the process, right? It's progress, right? And that is something that I don't think many people talk about. I think people are so shameful of when they fail. And when you're talking about the creative process and creative work, the only like it's objectively good and bad. So like, I mean, we can talk about artists and design, but in my world, or art and design, but in my world, design is something that is objectively good or bad. Mm-hmm. And really the gist of it is, does it work or not? Mm. Does it cause a lot of visual tension? Can people follow it? You know, can you turn on your phone and know how to navigate it without like a long set of instructions, right? There's some objectively good and bad things. And so, the process of creating those things comes through failing and learning that you did something, you tried something that didn't quite work out the way that you intended, or it didn't reach its potential. So what we're all trying to do, honestly, on this planet is just help things reach its potential, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. For our own benefit. And so what I'm trying to do with this idea of failure, one of my friends, Ty Mattson, who's like an incredible creative, MattsonCreative.com. And like, he was like, man, no one's going to come to your conference this year because it's about failure, or you're calling everyone a failure. Why would you do that? And then I showed him the artwork and kind of took him through kind of the intent behind that. And it just started to resonate with him. And he's like, oh man, that's amazing. Let's do it. You know, like, but it's, I just want people to kind of like live in, like, I literally want to create banners for everyone that say failure across them. You know, it's like I'd love to know the intent behind the Nirvana shirt that just says loser. Mm. Right. But there's something about being in that moment where you failed. You know, you have a choice. You can either learn from that and grow from that, or you can sit in that failure. Both of those things are not bad.
Sure.
But it's like, how long do you allow yourself to sit in that failure before you understand that, like, hey, you're still alive. Mm-hmm. You can change this. Mm-hmm. You can grow this into something that works. You can learn from this experience. And the other thing that I say is like, basically a successful creative career is full a failure. Mm-hmm. It's like literally the hallmark of it. I mean, I know a lot of young creatives who, like, you know, graduated from college, and because college is so expensive, they're told from the outset is like, you need to be making some serious cash. Like, you need to go work for Facebook and make six figures.
Right.
But it's like they get to Facebook, and you can read about this stuff online. Like, basically people have been kind of going for greener pastures right now, and things that they think are opportunities, but they're not happy because they can't do the work yet. Mm-hmm. They haven't failed enough, honestly, to do the work. Mm-hmm. And so there's another kind of deeper thing that I think about a lot too with that aspect. And like, it's like, who do we put in charge? I gotta be careful, but like, who do we put in charge of helping like our city? who do we put in charge of like helping our community? And when I think of like, you know, philanthropy and affluence, and like one of the things I think Memphis needs to struggle better with is like this idea of like, who do we put in charge of solving some of our biggest issues? Is it people who never had to solve a problem in their life because they could always throw money at it? Or is it someone who's been in the struggle, who actually has the experience and the story that leads them to be able to do these things, right? That authentically makes them someone who can reach out and, you know, have the respect to solve these problems or the network to solve these problems. So, I deal with this idea of failure and like how impactful it is to like digest it in real ways that like actually help you with perspective and sanity.
Right.
And this idea that, you know, that's just what it is. And I think social media information, we were just talking about this beforehand, like the amount of information we have in our pockets, like makes us go crazy. We're not supposed to know all that stuff. But if you just know how, again, to your point earlier, if you just know what the dynamic is and you learn how to navigate in the midst of that dynamic, and then also embracing the fact that you're not going to get it right 100% of the time. I mean, that's just like, that's the law of probability, right? Or I don't know the right way to say that, but like, it's just the way it is. You're going to not get it right.
Right.
And it's what you do in those moments that really define who you are. And so it's a much deeper level, you know, meaning for all of our lives. But then there's also like a creative career.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do with failure? You know, the people that are the most famous is a word I don't like to use, but the people who are most known for their work are people who harness that. And so that's what that's one of the biggest stories that I'm hoping to elevate and kind of curate this year at the conference.
That sounds so important. I'm excited about that and hopeful. And whether it's on a creative level or just sort of our general human experience level, it sounds like there's so much potential for growth. And, you know, what a world. Again, that coming back, I would hope that message of grace in the Christian tradition, at least, which we should, at least, you know, given the percentage of folks who claim to be Christians in this part of the world and this country, that if at base, you know, and your identity is that you are beloved by God, that inherent value is your starting place, then failure isn't as scary because
that's right.
You know who you are. You know you're a child of God. You're a member of whatever communities and identities that you claim. But at base level, you are valued and beloved because you are. And if that's true, then I can risk. I can dare.
That's exactly
all of
right.
These things. And that's where the fire comes in. That's where the ingenuity and the creativity, I think, really, really turn alive. And I don't know. That's really invigorating. I'm excited to listen and hear the stories of how this conference goes and kind of where that sends some people. Josh, thank you. That's really invigorating. We'll be right back here at Faithfully Memphis with some closing words. Thank you very much. Any shout outs or links that you would like to share, Josh? Thank you so much for being with us today. I know the conference is coming up soon.
So the conference is coming up. It's October 6th through 8th downtown at the Halloran Center. And again, that's 18 presentations, 10 hands-on workshops, 3 amazing after parties, and a vendor market that I want to also give a shout out to. But basically, it's just if you're creative and you're just trying to figure out how to put it all to work, you know, come and spend time with us. If you look at other conferences, it's fairly affordable, but it's creativeworks.co. That's the website that you can go to and figure out, you know, who's coming and what they're up to. And then the other thing is we have a market. So if you're trying to get a sense of what we do and you don't want to pay for a conference ticket, we have a 30 plus vendor market that'll be downtown at the Halloran Center. It's free and open to the public. It's very similar to, like, say, Crafts and Drafts or a holiday market that we're all used to. But I'm bringing people in from everywhere across the country. So I think there's probably 6 or 7 vendors from Memphis, and the rest are from Portland and Orlando and Los Angeles and things like that. So it's really amazing to see what people are putting out there, and they make really great gifts and things like that. So again, it's creativeworks.co is the website. And then pretty much anywhere you can find us online at the username creativeworks. And then also our Twitter is cworksco.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Well, friends, you can find the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee on Facebook, Instagram, and at edwtn.org. You can listen to this episode and past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please do like and subscribe. This has been Jonathan Chesney for Faithfully Memphis. Until next time, friends, stay safe and stay positive.